welcome to the best podcast in the Valley for 2020, as voted on by the readers of Phoenix Magazine. You've downloaded another stellar episode of Mac Watson Talks. On this episode, a new justice sits on the Supreme Court. What was the hurry about? Also, Arizona has a plan to give people a COVID vaccine, but does it make sense? Dr. Fauci says we're still in the first wave of the pandemic. Oh, great. And why is there a plastic partition on Susan B. Anthony's grave? That and more is coming up. This is episode 93.
You're listening to Mac Watson Talks, Season 2. Voted best podcast in the Valley for 2020 by the readers of Phoenix Magazine.
You have whiplash? I have whiplash. What just happened today?
Well, what happened today was late this evening, we had a new Supreme Court justice installed, sworn in to the United States Supreme Court. And late Monday, again, this is East Coast time, you had Justice Clarence Thomas swearing in Amy Coney Barrett.
I feel like I put my phone down and played with my kids and everything happened and I didn't even know about it.
Yeah, that's basically what happened.
What? They approved him? And you're like, what? They swore her in.
Yeah, Amy Coney Barrett, it was officially confirmed onto the Supreme Court late Monday by a deeply divided Senate with Republicans overpowering Democrats to install Trump's nominee days before the election and secure a likely conservative court majority for years to come. So this is the third justice in Trump's term. What do you think?
Well, here's what I do think. At least they already had their party, right, when he announced it. So at least they did the swearing in without having another party for the swearing in. Because really, we don't need another super spreader event happening anywhere.
Okay.
That part of it, I'm like, wow, that's hardly any time at all to be able to have your family there, to have, people you want to be able to witness that. That's a big deal for an attorney.
I'm sure, though.
It's the biggest deal. It's the biggest deal. It's the biggest deal to be on the U.S. Supreme Court. And she didn't know when she woke up this morning that she was going to be approved.
I think she had an idea.
Did she know it would happen today? And it just all went so super quickly.
I'm sure she was kept abreast of the situation that if they got a confirmation, they were not going to dawdle or dilly-dally in getting her onto the Supreme Court.
So I also think it's kind of interesting that the Chief Justice didn't swear her in. I do think that's interesting.
I think that's interesting, too, as well.
But I think it's
I don't know what to look into it.
I just think it's kind of a little bit of a political, a little bit of a image choice. I feel like it has a little bit of I'm sure she got to choose.
It's good for optics.
It's good for optics. She got to choose who she wanted to swear her in. Most people would choose the Chief Justice because he is the head of the court. But on the other hand, Clarence Thomas is senior member of the court.
He's also more conservative, too.
He is conservative.
Remember, too, this is Trump's choice to fill the vacancy of the late liberal icon Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So even though it was a woman, they're nowhere near as far as
ideology. She's much closer to Sandra Day O'Connor than she is to Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Barrett told those who gathered that she believes it is the job of a judge to resist her policy preferences. She vowed, I will do my job without any fear or favor. And Monday's vote was the closest high court confirmation ever to a presidential election and the first in modern times with no support from the minority party. Okay, it's rushed, but he didn't do anything illegal. He didn't do anything bad. Mm-mm. It may look bad. It may be bad form, but it's not as though he rushed somebody or chose somebody that shouldn't be there, right?
Right. Nope. Absolutely true.
All right. So what's the big deal?
Everything was above board, but again, it just felt...
Feel icky?
Because he's trying to get her in there before they hear a case, because she can't vote on a case that she isn't there to hear. And they're hearing those cases. The term opens and they're hearing
those cases. She starts Tuesday.
Right. And the term opens and they need to have, she needs to actually be a sitting member of the bench to be able to vote. She can't be sworn in later and vote on cases that she wasn't there for at oral arguments.
Okay. So what cases are coming up that you think they want her to be a part of?
There's cases coming up about
affordable care, the border wall.
About absentee balloting, mm-hmm. and there surely may be a lawsuit, just like we've seen in other presidential elections, about what happens when the majority vote is so much different than the electoral vote and all of those things. And then if there's any kind of corruption, any kind of hanging chads going on out there, that's that problem that comes into the Supreme Court and you're putting her there just in time to decide it for the president who appointed her. That's the ick factor there.
But the ick factor, I mean, this would, Democrats would do the same thing, though.
Oh, absolutely they would. Yeah. I'm not saying they wouldn't. I, early in my career, I worked for a judge who was like, look, it doesn't matter whether it's improper or not. If it appears improper, then in this office, we don't do it. And that was a really interesting lesson for me, because not all judges and not all even lawyers adhere to that, like the appearance of impropriety. But the fact is when there appears to be impropriety, people believe it, whether it's there or not.
Well, there's no impropriety that I can see. Everything was above board.
It was just,
wow, that was quick.
They want her on those cases that are important to the Republicans.
And you can't blame them for that.
That are political cases coming before the court, not necessarily cases that are like private parties that really have to do with particular acts of Congress and particular ways that are the political system runs in our country. That's really where those are the cases that it's so interesting that she'll be able to vote on and how quickly it happened.
But also, if you think about it, too, the justices are weighing Trump's emergency plea for the court to prevent the Manhattan district attorney from acquiring his tax returns. Like you mentioned, they've got Obama, the Affordable Care Act coming up. So to me, it's crying over spilled milk. The Democrats have been crying over spilled milk for the past couple of weeks.
And this is how our country works. The checks and balances of each branch, and sometimes branches are out of balance
right.
with the other one. And that's where there's checks in the other branches. Right now, the Supreme Court's heavily weighed with conservatives, but what if we're about to see a liberal come into the executive branch? That's how checks and balances work. That's how this country has worked for over 200 years.
So if you're like me, this really doesn't change my world. It doesn't change my scope of anything.
It could change your world.
Right. But when would that effect be? Depending upon case by case?
It depends on what cases come before them. They can't make a case come before them. They can't make an issue come before them. So it has to come before them, and it has to come before them in a perfectly positioned case.
Also in the news this week, Maricopa County Public Health's executive director is expressing concern over the increasing number of coronavirus cases in the state. Now, we're talking about Executive Director Marcy Flanagan. She said she's keeping a close eye on the numbers and which way they track in the coming weeks. Flanagan said the upward trajectory is more gradual than the surge we saw over the summer, noting that Arizona's COVID-19 conditions aren't as bad as the summer spike yet. She says if we continue the rise in the next couple of weeks, we may get to a point where we're asking the state or the governor to really consider what else can we do? What more can we do? I see this really as a non-issue, too. What do you think, Cricket?
I think it's a non-issue in that.
And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to dismiss this. I'm not dismissing it at all.
Some of that increase comes simply from the fact that we've opened up schools.
That's right.
That's right. You know, because kids are carriers. Kids are asymptomatic carriers. What's really scary about that means that there's a lot of kids at school that are carrying it and that you don't even know it and giving it to other people.
And
that are carrying it. And by the time somebody actually comes down with symptoms, it's very hard to contact trace back because those asymptomatic carriers have never been tested. And by the time they try to trace it back to them, they wouldn't even be able to test positive. So I think it's really probably a non-issue. It's still important people to get their flu shots so that we don't have that additional surge of flu season that really puts our at-risk populations in a really precarious position. And that's, we can all do our part, even if there's no vaccine for COVID-19, to get our flu vaccination and make sure that we don't have a surge in flu. And for anyone who doesn't believe that that's really a factor, I can tell you that in 2009, my mom got the H1N1 flu. Now, would she ever be counted among the fatality numbers for that pandemic? No. Because the distance in time from when she had the flu to when she actually died and the comorbidity of having cancer meant that they ultimately said she died of cancer. But it was the beginning of the end for her when she got the flu. She never left the house again.
You said it really affected her. The flu really took a lot out of her.
It was like she could never bounce back from that.
Mm-hmm. Also in the news that there may be a vaccine soon enough. We may see a vaccine, but who would get it because there might not be enough of a supply to initially go around?
Well, every state is required to submit a plan to the federal government about how they would administer the vaccine. And that is true of a lot of vaccines, particularly when they're first new and they're just coming out. But for this particular vaccine, the federal government has asked states to submit those plans. And those plans really are based, again, back even as far back as 2009 in the H1N1 flu. And it has to do with who gets priority. Well, of course, who gets priority? First responders, healthcare workers, people that are on the front lines that are taking care of people who are infected with the disease. We can't expect to help people get better from COVID-19 if all of our doctors die of COVID-19. So they're the first ones.
Yeah, they're 1A.
Nurses, doctors, paramedics.
1A is, like you said, healthcare personnel, pharmacists, first responders. What 1B is other essential workers, such as food industry workers.
Exactly.
Teachers, childcare workers. And then you've got people who are at increased risk for COVID-19 illness, including elderly as well as compromised people. And then you go to 2, people are increased risk of acquiring or transmitting the coronavirus, such as individuals attending colleges, universities, and then people with limited access to routine vaccination services, including people with disabilities and people who don't speak English. So it sounds like the general population isn't going to get this vaccine. And what I've read,
we are. We're not going to get it right away.
Right. We're not going to get the vaccine when it comes out. And what I've read, too, is that 50% of people wouldn't take it or trust it anyway. So, I mean,
well, we know who we have to thank for that.
Yes,
the messaging
that's true.
Coming from the federal government.
That's true.
That we don't, it's nothing to worry about. I had it. I recovered. It's fine. People, I'm stronger than ever now, and now I'm immune.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the people, the anti-vaxxers,
it's
the people
kind of
that
messaging.
Don't vaccinate
their
children.
Well, the anti-vaxxers, they're not helping anything either, but certainly the messaging from the federal government has not helped in putting any trust in a vaccine that would be developed.
What's also interesting, too, is that you've got logistics. Who can get the medicine first? Where do they live? Where, you know, what population center do they live near? And also the vaccine likely will require 2 shots. So the Arizona plan.
So it's going to have the initial shot and then a booster,
mm-hmm.
which makes sense. I mean, we do boosters for kids, too, on like MMR for measles, mumps, rubella and other shots. So that's important. Because your body can ultimately outgrow its own immunity and need to have a booster to remind it to keep that prototype for fighting it if you ever come in contact with it, which is the immunity, which is what the vaccination gives you.
The Arizona plan provides guidance for how officials will communicate with the specific population groups and react to scenarios such as low vaccine supplies, outlines the kind of demographic research that they're getting ready to do. So could a COVID-19 vaccine be on the way? It sounds like it, but the general population won't get it for a while. Here's something that's even more scary, though. The president is still campaigning. And what's scary about that is the president is supposed to come out to the Goodyear Airport this week. 5 places that the president has been in the past 2 weeks, they've had an outbreak.
Does he do it at airports? Because they are outside.
They are outside
of local mandates for mask wearing.
That's
and
right.
Gathering sizes.
That's right. But what if we see an outbreak in Goodyear? What if we see an outbreak in Arizona
after
the president leaves?
It won't just be in Goodyear because people will come from all over the valley.
Well, you know what I mean.
Potentially all over the state and then take it back with them and we'll see another. Yeah. I mean, I wish he wasn't coming. I wish he wasn't. You know what? Nobody come. Just, you know, use social media and TV and whatever. I mean, I get why they're doing it and showing up in a state means something, but show up in the state and
wear a mask
and be responsible about it. I mean, but he doesn't care. He doesn't care because, like, you know what? I always say when people talk about, you know, like, oh, somebody will say to me, you're going to hell. And I'll say, you know what? That's not really the question. The question is, are we going big or, go big or go home? We're going to, you know, like,
right.
It's not a question of if, it's like, how big are we going to go to get there? And I think that's really what he's doing. I think in a lot of ways, he's like, win, lose, I'm going to go out with like the biggest bang ever.
So if he's going to lose, he's going to lose big.
I'm going to go and have all of these people like chant my name because that makes me feel like powerful. And I feed off of that because I'm a narcissist. And even if I lose, I'm going to be like, look at all these states where all these people were chanting my name. I mean, literally, I feel like he could rewatch those videos for the rest of his life and just like.
Oh, that's true. I could totally see him doing that.
Yeah.
You know, sitting in a wheelchair, you know, 89, 90 years old, watching
stroking
old
his
footage.
Ego.
Watch it. Oh, OK. Stroking his ego. Watching himself at these rallies, you know, thinking about how much people loved him. and how people voted for him and how he was the greatest president ever since
Glory
Lincoln.
Glory days.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's just really sad. It really is that this guy is going to come to the Goodyear Airport and there might be an indication that we could have an outbreak again, which I would not want to see. But so far in five other places the president has been to, after he has left, there has been an outbreak of COVID-19. I mean, you can directly trace it back to that, not him, but that that arena or that airport or that place. You can trace it back to five different outbreaks. It's just sad. It really is. And that's just some of the news this week. Thanks, Cricket.
Thank you, Mac.
Time for the Smackdown. And this time I'm smacking down COVID-19. That's right, the coronavirus. I'm not smacking down Dr. Anthony Fauci, not at all. But this week, Dr. Anthony Fauci said the very first wave of the coronavirus infections in the U.S. never entirely ended and called the current uptick in COVID-19 cases across the nation only an elongated and exacerbation of the original first wave. Oh, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases said, "We've never really had waves in the sense of up and then down to a good baseline. It's been up and wavering, up and down. Now we're at the highest baseline we've ever been, which is really quite precarious." Those are his words, precarious. The U.S. shattered its single-day record last week after reporting more than 85,000 new confirmed cases. There are currently 41,753 COVID-19 patients hospitalized across the country, a 40% increase from last month, according to data from the COVID Tracking Project. Fauci said that because the number of daily cases never fell to a low baseline, which he considers to be less than 10,000, the current coronavirus situation is just an extension of the first wave. Fauci says if you look at when we got hit badly, which was dominated early on by the Northeastern Corridor, particularly the New York metropolitan area, the cases went way up and then came back down to a baseline of about 20,000 cases. But we never really cleared and got down to a very low baseline, which I would consider to be less than 10,000 per day, maybe just a couple of thousand per day, he continued. So what does this mean? Well, Fauci noted that before the number of new COVID-19 cases had time to decrease to much lower figures, states began reopening over fears that lockdowns would hurt the economy. And he suggested the lack of a consistency across states has helped lead to infections in Florida, Texas, and elsewhere soaring in the summer, and it will go up in the winter. Let's hope not in Arizona. And that is the Smackdown.
You down with OPP?
Oh, you know me.
All right. It is time for other people's perspectives besides Mac and Crickets. And we are reading feedback, questions, comments from people who are out there listening to us. The way to submit your perspective is to become a subscriber, to become a patron on Patreon. And then you have that access. You can submit your perspective and we'll read them on the air.
Okay. Do we have one this week?
We do. We actually have a couple. So we have one from Aurora. She says, "My hometown, which is Kingman, voted to stop the mask mandate today. I'm scared of what will happen after the election. I really feel like there will be some unrest." And then she goes on to say, "Oh, and one more thing. Stop stealing signs. You're not 12 years old. It's not worth it."
Yeah, really.
"We need to start being kind to one another. The election will end. The virus will be with us for a while longer. I wish it would magically be gone on November 4th. But sadly, that's mythology. The longer we fight, the longer we suffer. We can do it, and we can do it together." Great feedback, Laura.
That is.
I think
a
lot of us are feeling that way.
I think so, too. All right, I've got one, Cricket, from Joan, okay?
Okay.
She is a huge listener. She loves the podcast, and she says, "Actually came up with a semi-intelligent question for both of you." Well, that's great, Joan. Thanks for the semi-intelligent question.
Well, we're semi-intelligent, so maybe it'll all work out.
There you go. "What media do you read or listen to come up with your topics, facts, and research? I'll have to write stuff down now when I listen, as I always have a comment. LOL. Wishing you much success, and also hope the job interviews go well." Thank you, Joan. I appreciate that. So what do? We go to a bunch of different websites. We go to different websites with different stuff on them. And
I think we do it differently, though.
Yeah, you're right.
So the way I do it is I've signed up to subscribe to a bunch of news, and I have a list or a news feed of news lists through Facebook. And they actually have like a little news tab down on the bottom. And I scroll through that and read stories, and then I'll go from there to my browser and search the stories to read other perspectives on the same story. But I actually start on Facebook because that's a place I am a lot. It's how I connect with my family and friends and keep in touch, and plus administering our Facebook page. And so I actually start a little bit different than you do, because you don't start on Facebook looking for news.
No, I don't.
You start on Twitter.
Yeah. I'm more of a Twitter fan than a Facebook fan.
Right. And I never think about getting news from Twitter. I just think about complaining and making fun of people there.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what it's for, so, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do that as well.
But most people don't think of Facebook as a place for news. But I've really found that they have categories where it's like local news, news on health, news on the elections. And I think they've done a good job of putting a fair amount of different stories in there. And I don't just rely on the stories that Facebook decides to stick in there, but that's a great place to start with topics. And then I can go out and research it and read articles from different news outlets that on the same topic.
Yeah,
so that's a great question, Joan, and it's more work than I thought it would be.
Like, it's a lot of work.
Really, like, I never read the news before we started doing the podcast, and now I'm like, oh my god, now I'm that person.
Well, so what we do is we compile, you know, just stuff that hits us, and we ask each other, do you have anything to say about it? Do you have any comment about that? Is there something there that we can get a little back and forth into?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I might read 8 articles before I send one of the links to you and be like, this article is where I want to talk, like the perspective I want to talk about it from. And you probably do the same thing. So, I mean, I could read literally, you know, 40 stories and maybe send you 2 or 3 links.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's about how many stories we talk about in any given podcast. So
thank you, Joan.
This one is not actually an OPP, but I did think it was an interesting comment in response to our information about the fact that you can submit your own perspective. This person is at Zima, which is one we've done a shout out for. This person is a Patreon. Well, and Joan and Aurora both are Patreon patrons as well. Saying, oh my God, you are so brave for soliciting opinions from people during our current climate and so close to Election Day. You two are awesome. I hope people will read, keep it succinct, and don't be a jerk and follow that guideline.
Well, it's true. I mean, in this climate, we are pretty brave for doing this, for asking people their opinion about stuff. But most people are very nice. Most people don't go off these rants or, you know, blast emails or anything like that. So far it's been pretty good.
Right. And if anybody is a jerk, we're not going to read it. I mean, if you're coming on here and you want your perspective is any type of bigotry, hate towards a particular group of people, we're probably not going to read it. Now, if you have an opinion about, you know, oh, Republicans this or Democrats this, that's totally different than having an opinion about women or all Hispanic people or all Black people or whatever, then, you know, we're probably not going to read those.
I would think not.
Yes. No, you can have a opinion about a political party or about conservatives doing this or liberals doing that. But once it crosses the line into really bigotry, look it up. If you don't know what that means, then we're probably not going to read it.
That's right.
So that's today's OPP.
Yeah, you know me.
You're listening to Mac Watson Talks Season 2. Voted best podcast in the Valley for 2020 by the readers of Phoenix Magazine.
So you still haven't signed up on Patreon? For as little as $5 a month, you'll have access to one additional episode every week. Here's just a snippet of what you're missing.
The other story.
Oh, what were you dressed up like?
A colonial boy.
Oh, I thought maybe you were dressed up like a snowflake.
Oh, wow. Zing.
Solid burn.
Thanks.
A colonial boy. Did you want to dress up as a colonial boy?
Yes.
You want to know the rest of the story? You're going to have to subscribe to Patreon to find out.
Time for the last word. You know, early voting kicked off this weekend in one particular county, and so did a local election tradition. In Rochester, New York, the gravestone of suffragist Susan B. Anthony, located at Mount Hope Cemetery in Rochester, is already covered in I Voted stickers. But they aren't exactly on the monument itself. New this year is a plastic shield covering the gravestone, which is to protect the marker from damage caused by hundreds of stickers put on during the election season. Some voters were stopping by to pay their respects, took a quick photo, but mostly this sticker trend became popular on Election Day 2016 when as many as 12,000 people visited the cemetery where Anthony is buried. a spring restoration project, had revealed the damage done to the marble marker. The woman's rights activist who called Rochester home was instrumental in fighting for women's right to vote, but she did not fight for your right to party. And that's disappointing. Until next time.
Thank you for listening to Mac Watson Talks. This episode is copyrighted and may not be reproduced in whole or part without express written permission. For more information and sponsorship availability, or to schedule an upcoming appearance, please visit MacWatsonOnline.com. And don't forget to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook and leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Tell your friends about us. We love new listeners.